Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And, Jim, it's not often the EPA and the good martini are intertwined, especially with a Democratic administration and a Democratic Senate going on right now. But that is, in fact, the case. It's been some pretty rough times here in the last few weeks for the EPA, and that means good news for conservatives. Issue number one, a federal judge ruling on Thursday that the Environmental Protection Agency exceeded its authority by attempting to regulate stormwater runoff into a Fairfax County creek as a pollutant. Virginia Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli, who Jim and I will be voting for governor later this year, sued the EPA over that, saying you can't regulate stormwater. It's not a pollutant to begin with. And the court agreed with that. We'll see if the case gets appealed to a higher level. But right now, that's a big win for Virginia. And Cuccinelli says it could save the state's taxpayers, meaning us, $300 million. Also, Lisa Jackson, the EPA administrator, out recently, kind of nebulous on why she was leaving. A lot of people think it's because, Jim, she was using private email accounts to help negotiate and formulate EPA policy, which is a huge no-no in terms of transparency and government policy. So the EPA is running on some hard times, and that's good for us.
It is. Kind of worth noting in that that rule in Fairfax County, the Fairfax County Board of Supervisors, who are not a bunch of Republicans, we can safely say, not a big fans of the overall worldview of Ken Cuccinelli, were right beside him in this fight with the federal government. You have a whole bunch of liberal Democrats who couldn't believe the idea that effectively the EPA was asserting the authority to regulate water as a pollutant. Two parts hydrogen, one part oxygen. I think we're all familiar with it. So there's that angle coupled with the whole use of her Gmail. Her Gmail account was richardwindsor@gmail.com, I believe. And when asked about this, she said it was named after her dog. Now, Greg, I don't know about you. I would call for Ms. Jackson to be fired from EPA just for calling her dog Richard Windsor, as opposed to Spot or Ruffy or any other name you want to give it. Like, that's the alleged that's a really weird explanation, and some might even argue inexplicable. But then the second thing is that this is a way of working around FOIA requests and congressional requests and everything else. It's a way of being able to formulate policies in secret and not have accountability. So I'm glad to see her going. I'm just afraid that in a couple of days, President Obama will announce that, quote, Richard Windsor, unquote, is going to be the new EPA head. And we'll be, you know, this, she'll come out with a fake mustache or something, and we'll be right back where we started from. So,
however she named the account, unless the dog was formulating policy and wasn't on the federal payroll, I'm not sure why that makes much of a difference. But
well, when you say that this is a dog's breakfast of a EPA policy here, now we know why.
Glad to start off the week on that news. Now, of course, we shift over to the bad martini, and that's that. As we've really expected for a number of weeks now here, the president this afternoon, by the time a lot of you hear this, it'll already have happened, the president nominating former Nebraska Republican Senator Chuck Hagel, who's not really a Republican anymore, to be defense secretary. We've already articulated a lot of the concerns previously on the Three Martini Lunch, from his negative view on Israel to his less than robust concern over the Iranian nuclear program. A lot of Democrats don't like him because of his views on a gay ambassadorial nominee back in the 1990s. It's clear the president is spoiling for a fight here, Jim, and I don't know if it's just because he's planning to, you know, institute a lot of cuts at the Pentagon and wants a Republican to blame at the helm for that, but it's clear that there could have been a lot of other choices here that wouldn't have engendered this type of opposition from both sides.
Yeah, I mean, this morning Chuck Todd said that there are probably 10 Democrat senators that are very iffy on a Hagel nomination, and for those who can do math, that would mean that Obama would need considerable Republican support. A lot of people are left scratching their heads saying, look, there are a lot of people who don't like Chuck Hagel for his stance on Iraq, for his fights within his own party, for his statements on Israel, for his opposition to even sanctions on Iran, for his endorsement of talking with Hamas. And then, of course, you have the gay lobby, very upset about his comments back then, you know, opposing Hormel, being aggressively gay and all that stuff. So you add it all up, there is a nice, broad, bipartisan consensus against Chuck Hagel. What everyone else is kind of left scratching their head is, so why is Obama so set on Hagel? And the explanation that seems to be gaining a lot of traction this morning is that, look, he didn't get Susan Rice, so now this is a, oh, don't you tell me who I'm going to have in my cabinet. This is a certain pugnacity in the president who wants to have this fight. It's not a good omen for the whole second term to come if Obama is picking fights like, no one has ever really articulated what makes Chuck Hagel really unique and the best possible choice. And so, look, you know, if Obama wants to pick fights, he may not win. I'm not going to stop him. I don't think it's really good for the country as a whole. But maybe we can look at his upside of some, you know, valuable political capital being eaten up on a relatively unimportant distinction between Hagel and some other, you know, non-controversial nominee who Obama could have chosen.
Yeah, absolutely. But keep in mind, Jim, he won.
He did. But you know what? You know, that doesn't mean you get everything you want, particularly when you have people in your own party who are iffy on this guy as the nominee. Somebody had said one interesting theme between Susan Rice and Chuck Hagel is that both of them have been in Washington a long time, and neither one is particularly well-liked by anyone who's ever worked with them.
I'm just waiting for when he busts out the I won again for the second term, because you know it's coming at some point. He's probably saving it for the debt ceiling, but who knows?
State of the Union. State of the Union. My fellow Americans, I won. Give me what I want.
All right, on to martini number three now, Jim. And as you have chronicled in the Jolt, we have talked about on the podcast, in the wake of the horrific massacre at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut, in mid-December, a lot of people right, left, and center talking about the need to address a lot of the factors that have gone into these mass shootings lately, mental health being a big one. But, of course, most on the left are looking at gun restrictions, and even some that you wouldn't expect to be going in a knee-jerk fashion in that direction, like Joe Manchin, who used a shotgun to blow away legislation in a campaign ad in 2010, said that, you know, I don't need more than the three rounds and a clip and so forth. But as you chronicled in the Jolt, he walked that back big time for West Virginia media when he wasn't talking to MSNBC. And now, of course, the Des Moines Register, there was a columnist there last week who said that John Boehner and Mitch McConnell need to be dragged behind a pickup truck until they understand what needs to be done here. They had horrific things to say about all NRA members. And now the paper itself is saying he probably went a little bit too far, even though he was trying to be satirical. So good to see that as time has gone on here, the crazy reactions are being tempered to some extent, and we'll see if that follows up in legislation as well.
Yes, I'm glad to see the Des Moines Register regrets the missteps, in their words, of calling for Mitch McConnell and John Boehner to be dragged from the back of a truck. I'm glad that doesn't really represent their view. The three different things. The first is the Des Moines Register realizing how furiously over the top the rhetoric of their columnists had gotten. Manchin basically admitted, look, I don't see how you can go on Morning Joe and say, we need to do this, and then like 3 days later go back to radio stations in your home state and say, whoa, I'm not saying we should do this, you know? I mean, I believe if you see him in a neck brace, it's because of the whiplash that he engendered in his about face on this issue. And then the third thing is, on this week with George Stephanopoulos, Heidi Heitkamp, newly elected Democratic senator, and she herself is saying what she has read the Obama administration is proposing is extreme, way in extreme, to use her words. And she would oppose it. She was A-rated by the NRA. So here's the thing. I think we can now see that the pro-gun Democrats aren't quite as supportive of gun control as they seemed in the hours immediately after the horrific Newtown shooting. And I think that there's a little bit of you know, common sense returning to this. What I kind of find, you know, galling about this is the degree to which certain folks in the Democratic Party can play both sides of the aisle on this. When the angry mob is at the steps of the NRA headquarters, they're quick to join it, and then later on they'll try to make nice and, you know, win, you know, stay on the endorsement list. And I think it exposes the hypocrisy that you know abounds in this discussion of this topic, and it's kind of bothersome. And I'm hoping that gun owners remember this the next time Heitkamp and Manchin and these folks are up for re-election.
The Senate Democrats are obviously going to push hard on this. The chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, Republican Bob Goodlatte of Virginia, said he's interested in passing virtually nothing new in terms of restrictive gun legislation. So a definite battle being pitched up on the Hill, and we'll see where the public battle on this goes from here. But it's good to see that cooler heads are prevailing, at least in the immediate aftermath of this. Jim, good start to the week. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg. See you tomorrow.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.